Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 73, The Quest for Identity. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Too Hot, Scott Michella. Hey, Scott, how was your holiday break? Did you get any gaming in?
I did. I brought my NES Classic, my Classic Edition, to Thanksgiving and played through most of The Legend of Zelda. I'm in the ninth dungeon, so I'm really close to finishing the game.
Oh, wow. Very cool. I brought along my NES Classic as well, but I actually ended up spending the entire weekend, gaming-wise, just playing Pokemon Sun.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Yeah. That's a pretty good testament to the fact that it's a good game.
Yeah, I'm still enjoying it. I mean, I've probably put in about 20 hours so far, and I'm still only on like the second island, but having a good time with it.
Excellent.
Of course, we are back this week to talk more about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We've got some news to talk about, as well as some game impressions. And our big topic this week is going to be sort of a buyer's guide of sorts. Not just one of those boring buyer's guides that you see that has really obvious stuff in it, but sort of a unique buyer's guide that has cool stuff that, you know, as a Nintendo fan, you should probably be aware of and might be a good gift for someone you know, or perhaps maybe even yourself. But before we get to that, let's kick it off with some news. And this week in the news, Fiery Mario, what is he burning and what is he trying to hide? Exclusives later tonight. That's a lie. We're not going to have anything about Fiery Mario.
No, we're not coming back to talk about Fiery Mario, are we?
But we will talk about the Nintendo theme park update because Nintendo released a video just earlier this week.
Yeah, it's funny. They have a two-minute video that says absolutely nothing.
Well, that's not entirely true. It had some very important things. For one thing,
we now know that
this Nintendo World is coming to all three Universal theme parks in Japan, in Orlando.
Yes, that is super cool.
And in Hollywood.
I just assumed it would only be in Orlando because they have at least two lands that they could plow and no one would miss them. So I really am excited for visiting the one in Orlando. I feel like that's going to be the big one. And
it seems likely.
And then in Hollywood, where they made like, you know, in Orlando, they had two big Harry Potter lands across from each other.
Right.
And they built kind of a mashup of those two separate lands into the Hollywood Studios park because they just don't have a lot of room to work with in the Hollywood location.
Right. That is true.
And I'm not sure how big the Japan theme park is. I hope it's on the outskirts of the city because you definitely need a lot of space for stuff like this.
Well, you know, a lot of people have been wondering what was going on. Some people thought, oh, is it only going to be in Japan? Some people thought, is it only going to be in Orlando? But it is really cool to know that it's going to be in all three because obviously for me, living here in California, if there's one I'm going to go to, it's most likely going to be Hollywood. So that is pretty cool to know. Very exciting. I guess there was sort of some question before as to how big this was going to be, if it was just going to be just a single ride or if it was going to be a whole world. Although they didn't exactly confirm it, it sounds like it is going to be a whole massive world or land or whatever you want to call it devoted to Nintendo.
Yeah, which is great. I love that. So in Orlando, if you haven't been to the Harry Potter land, it's big, but it's big when you add the both together. Each separate Harry Potter land isn't that big. You couldn't spend all day in it. You could, you
I
know,
guess that's true, but you can spend all day between the two of them.
You could, yes. Because
I went there
that.
About a year ago, and I spent pretty much the entire day between the two Harry Potter areas.
It doesn't help that the lines are kind of long, and the experiences don't move a lot of people through, so you do have to wait in line for some of the experiences, unfortunately.
I don't know. I've certainly experienced worse lines. I didn't think it was too bad. And obviously, there were some things that were worth experiencing multiple times. I guess there was one ride, the one that was through Hogwarts proper. That one was a very long line.
Yeah.
But I've been through a lot worse for rides of less quality.
For sure. And what's nice is they theme the line.
Yes. Yes,
especially in the Harry Potter land. So you're not really bored. Around every corner, there's another cool interactive experience that's part of the line, which is really, really nice for
that's
people
true.
Who are stuck for 2 hours waiting to get onto what amounts to like a 3D roller coaster experience.
I mean, I don't think I ever had to wait that long. I think my longest line was maybe 50 minutes or something, not counting the time where I got stuck in Gringotts Bank for a long, long time.
Oh, no.
That wasn't supposed to be part of the ride.
Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to be trapped in there. But my point is, that it was really amazing. After experiencing the Harry Potter stuff, I'm really enthusiastic about what Universal can do for Nintendo. If it comes anywhere close to the way they did Harry Potter, this is going to be amazing.
Yes.
It's not just the rides. Like you said, it's also standing in line. It's going to the shops. It's everything. It's absolutely amazing. And we got a little bit of a hint of that from this video, just seeing the elements that were in the background.
That's right. In the background, they had built a bunch of really cool, like, piranha plant stuff and question boxes, stuff that, you know, would live in the Mushroom Kingdom.
Yeah, there was a fire flower sitting there on a box. There was a Koopa shell, a spiky red Koopa shell, a Bullet Bill cannon, a snow-covered tree, a snow-covered note block, just everything that seems like it would fit into a Mario world. Hopefully that's just the beginning. I mean, obviously that's just a mock-up. It's just something, you know, probably, you know, that they're toying with some ideas. But hopefully that goes way beyond Mario. I would love to see, you know, something for Hyrule. I'd love to see, like, a Kirby Land, you know, Splatoon area, all that stuff. Hopefully all that stuff is in there, because I think it would be really, really neat.
I think so, too. And Universal has kind of, in a way, taken a page out of Disney's playbook and done even better than Disney has in recent years. So
I completely agree.
I am super excited. They really, the level of theming that they have for the Harry Potter Land, it's probably the best theme park experience, you know, outside of Disney World, and then even probably surpasses most of the stuff in Disney World.
Oh, I think it does. When I was there last year, I was mostly there to go to Disney World, and I spent, like, you know, 4 or 5 days going to the different Disney parks. And then I'm like, okay, well, I gotta go check out this Harry Potter thing if I'm all the way out here in Florida. And I went there, and it did. It totally blew away anything that Disney had in most respects. So as I said, super excited. Nintendo also issued a press release with a few additional details. It says the Nintendo-themed areas will be, quote, expansive, immersive, and interactive. It also says there will be authentic environments filled with multiple attractions, restaurants, and shops, and that there will be something for everyone, regardless of age. It also mentions that planning is well underway, and that the parks will open separately, not simultaneously, over the next several years. That's still a pretty vague time frame, and we certainly don't have many clues about what's going to be in the parks. But Scott, if you just wanted to throw out a couple of ideas about what you'd want to see in a Nintendo theme park, what would be your top picks?
I'd love to see a Mario Kart ride.
Yes, totally. I think that's the most obvious thing they could do, something with Mario Kart, you know, Rainbow Road, whether it's an actual, you know, kart racing experience thing like they have at Disneyland, or it's just a roller coaster that's themed after Mario Kart. Yeah. Either way, I think would be really, really cool.
Yeah, so a thrill ride based on Mario Kart, and then some kind of like the Transformers ride, like the Spider-Man ride, like the Harry Potter ride, where you're in a vehicle and you're wearing 3D glasses and you're looking at a projection, but you feel like you're inside of it. That would be perfect for a Zelda experience. Ride through Hyrule.
That'd be cool.
And I'd love to visit a town that feels like it's out of Hyrule.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that could be really cool. For me, I would love to see a haunted mansion done up like Luigi's Mansion.
Oh, that would be so great. That would be so great.
That'd be amazing. I'm sure we could actually, you know, turn this topic into an entire big topic or an entire episode sometime. But yeah, it's cool to see that there's a little bit of an update to report. They haven't forgotten about it, and that everything seems to be moving along well. Pretty cool.
I will wait in line for 4 hours to get into a theme park like that.
Yeah, well, we might have to. Hopefully it won't be that bad. But yeah, definitely looking forward to it whenever it happens. Moving on from there, I recently got to play a new release on the Wii U console, and that is Exile's End.
What is it? I this completely, as most things do, fly under my radar.
Well, I know we've talked about it before, because I played it back at E3. It is a 2D Metroid-like exploration-based adventure game. It's published by XSEED, and it is very similar to Metroid in a lot of respects. You play as, I guess, some sort of space marine or something, and you've crash-landed on this alien world. It's very isolated, desolate, mysterious. You don't really know what's going on. But, you know, that's one thing that players like a lot about the Metroid series, is just this feeling of being alone on alien planet, and this kicks this up to the nth degree. So you really don't really know what's going on. You're not ever sure if you could be attacked by some super powerful monster. And in the early goings, there's a lot of areas where your screen view is really limited. Just like there's a spotlight around your character and you can't really tell what's in the periphery. So that really adds to the atmosphere and really adds to the feeling of suspense. I wouldn't call it, like a scary game. It's not trying to spook you. But, there is just a slight little bit of that suspenseful element that's in there. It's very exploration heavy. You aren't given a lot of direction. It's very old school. You aren't bogged down with tutorials or anything. You just, start exploring this planet. You get occasional messages over the radio. But when you acquire new weapons and new items, you aren't really told what to do with them. It's up to you to figure it out and just explore, and try to figure out what's going on in this place.
Is this game helped or hindered by the 16-bit style that a lot of games seem to have these days?
Well, I'd say it works pretty well for it. I don't think it's one of the best-looking games of its type. I'd say it looks kind of like a mid-level Genesis game. It's not quite up to Super NES spec. So if it was more like a Super NES game, I think it would be better. But I think it works. I think it works pretty well. If I had one criticism of it so far, it's that the things I've acquired have been kind of pedestrian. So far, I've got a double jump, I've got a grenade, I've got some timed explosives. Nothing really innovative or out of the ordinary so far. I'm only a couple hours in, so maybe there will be some really unique, interesting stuff. But so far, it's just kind of, a little bit by the numbers for that type of game. Not saying that's necessarily a problem. It can still be a lot of fun, but not really super innovative yet. It's not especially challenging either. Most of the challenge just comes from exploring the world and trying to figure out where to go and what to do, and presents those sorts of things as puzzles, so to speak. But so far, the enemies, except for one that mauled me and killed me instantly, haven't been particularly challenging.
Yeah. Is there a good variety of enemies in this game?
So far, there's not. I think I've only encountered a handful of different enemies, and most of them are pretty dumb. Yeah, it doesn't really seem to be focused so much on the combat so much as it is focused on just the exploration and sense of discovery.
It's interesting that these indie developers have such love for Super Metroid, Castlevania, and they're trying to emulate it. But it's so hard to make a game that's better than Super Metroid. Even with all we know about modern gaming, it's very difficult to make a game in the style of Super Metroid and not be compared to Super Metroid. So
yeah, it's true. It's funny because actually, if you look at the press materials, they never say anything about it being that type of game.
Yeah.
They say it's more of a cinematic adventure along the lines of Out of This World or Flashback. And it certainly does have some cutscenes similar to those games that pop up once in a while. But it really is much more of a Metroid-style game more than anything else. So don't be fooled. That's definitely the type that it is. Also, here's a pro tip for you. The game autosaves. I spent a long, long time trying to find a save room or figure out how to save my game before I discovered, it just autosaves. You pretty much get a save and a checkpoint every time you go into a new room. So don't worry about that. You can just quit and exit your game, and you will start not too far from where you quit. The manual does not explain a whole lot. Like I said, they just kind of throw you in there, and it's up to you to figure out what's going on. If you like that kind of thing, if you're from the old school of gaming, then you'll probably be like, great, for once someone's not holding my hand. But if you do want to know things, like how to save, then you might be like, okay, I could use just a little more information here.
So this is on the Wii U eShop, and that's it for now?
It's on other platforms as well, but as far as Nintendo goes, yes, it is only in the Wii U eShop. I'm enjoying it. I like the game. I definitely think it's worth $10. I would go out and probably get Axiom Verge first, as well as the Metroid games. But if you've already got those, you've already played those, and you want something that's kind of similar, I would say this is definitely worth a shot. Really good controls, solid visuals, and like I said, very, very atmospheric. So
cool.
You could do a lot worse than Exile's End.
And you can play it on the gamepad as well.
Yeah, I think you can, but I haven't done that yet myself.
Gotcha.
All right, we've got a fair bit of email stored up from the past couple of weeks, so why don't we dive into some of that?
Awesome. Thanks for sending us email.
This first one comes from Brian Booth. And this was from earlier in the month. He says, how refreshing to listen to one of my podcasts that doesn't have anything to do at all with the election. The live contest drawing was a cool idea. Can't wait for the next one. Missed out on the GBA and heard it's got a really killer library.
It does. It's one of my favorite handheld consoles.
You didn't really ask us, but regarding your conversation about ports we'd like to see coming to the Switch, I think it's about time for the Radiant Fire Emblem games to come back into the spotlight. Those were two games that I think we brought up in our Wii and GameCube discussions over the last couple weeks. So I think, yeah, that would be great. It'd be great to see those back. And, you know, even if we aren't soliciting comments, we will be happy to take comments and feedback on anything we talk about during the show.
Yeah, we read everything you send, so please keep sending that stuff in.
Back to his email. The portable functionality of the Switch makes it seem like a perfect fit for the series. And can you imagine a Radiant Hero cartridge that included both Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn? How cool would that be? Especially considering how much those games are going for online these days. Very good point. I was also wondering how you guys choose the song and the dramatic reading each episode. Is it all Hoff or is Scott involved? Do you have a list already made or do you just pluck one out of the ether each week? Not sure if you take requests, but I wonder if any of these games have dramatic reading-worthy box text. Rockin' Cats, Rocky Rodent, Sparkster, The Adventures of Lalo, Air Fortress, and Burger Time. So to answer that question, mostly I come up with the lists for the song and the dramatic reading. Usually when I've got some spare time, I'll just, you know, put together a whole bunch of ideas, store them away, and then that'll, you know, we'll have a list of things to choose from for the next several weeks. However, I'm always open to suggestions. After 73 episodes, I've gone through many of my favorite games and many of the more amusing back-of-the-box dramatic readings that I knew of off the top of my head. So sure, I would be happy to take a look at any of these and see if they might be good fits. I know Adventures of Lalo has been on my radar, so that one I've certainly thought of before. The other ones I'll have to take a look at, and who knows, maybe I will include those in a future episode.
One thing your dramatic readings have taught me is that even if it's a good game, the back of the box text could be just a complete and total train wreck.
Yes, like Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Although sometimes, Scott, you do help out when it comes to choosing these things. An episode or two back, we needed to come up with some music, and you suggested Luigi's Mansion because I didn't have anything figured out. So I'm happy to take your advice. And yeah, if listeners have any requests, sure, send them our way. I'll see what we can do. Our next letter comes from listener Name. I think that's how it's pronounced. This listener says, now that the Wii U is officially winding down, what are your top 10, 20, or 30 games for the system as per Nintendo Power tradition?
Yeah, we got to do that. We got to do that.
We will definitely get to that. We will get to that. That'll probably be our big topic sometime down the road. I certainly hope and intend to do that. Just naming a few things off the top of my head, though. Certainly, Super Mario 3D World will be on there. Mario Kart 8. Splatoon. DuckTales Remastered is going to be on there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Shovel Knight.
Yeah, Shovel Knight will be on there as well. Probably Xenoblade Chronicles X. But yeah, we'll have to sit down and figure this out and come up with a list. There are definitely still lots of reasons to keep on loving that Wii U, even though it's near the end of its life cycle. But we will dedicate an episode to it, hopefully, in the not-too-distant future.
I was just going to say, you're going to be able to pick up a Wii U for super cheap in the next 6 months. So keep an eye out for fire sales on Wii U's because you might want to buy one and save one in the box for when they go get bidded up to like $1,000 on eBay. I defy you to try to find a Wii boxed on eBay for cheap.
There's also been a crapload of cheap games available through like Black Friday sales and stuff like that. So
and those,
keep your eyes open.
Yeah, those Nintendo Selects are also a great deal.
Scott, you want to read the next one?
Sure. Justin says he's a big fan of the podcast. Thanks, Justin. He's working on a Game Boy project and he wants to review all the hardware, including mods. He's hoping that I personally was either selling one of the mods we were discussing on the show or could point him in the right direction on where the best place to get one is. He's not handy, so he wants to buy one that's already been modded, and he's thanking us for the show.
Yeah, obviously you are the expert when it comes to modded systems. So what advice do you have for Justin?
So Justin, if you're looking to mod a Game Boy, the best place to buy a modded Game Boy, believe it or not, is going to be on either eBay or in like a gaming forum. The Shmups forum has some people who will sell pre-modded consoles. I'm a member of the Something Awful forums. There's a great marketplace there in the forums for getting a pretty good modded system from someone who's very talented. I'm not good enough to sell consoles modded as an expert service, so what I do is I mod them for friends and mostly give them away. For Game Boy, I honestly, you're gonna think I'm crazy for saying this. Game Boy mod is relatively easy. There's some great tutorials on YouTube on how to mod a Game Boy. Rose Colored Gaming is a good place to pick up replacement hardware for a broken system. So what I do is I go on eBay, I buy a broken Game Boy, and I'll go on either Rose Colored Gaming or Handheld Legend, noS.com. Handheld Legend sells things like battery compartment connectors those are the things that get all gunky when the batteries explode. Inside a Game Boy. Most of the broken Game Boys on eBay really just have bad battery contacts that have got acid residue on them from an exploded battery. And those are super easy to replace. Just get a pliers, yank it out, stick these replacement ones that cost like, I don't know, a buck for a little baggie of like 10 of them. Teach yourself how to solder. Believe it or not, soldering isn't that hard. Honestly, I think a Game Boy is the best project to learn how to solder because you're really, for a backlight on an original Game Boy, it's really only like 3 solder points. Modding a Game Boy is super easy and super cheap. You can get a backlight for like $11 and you can get the battery contacts for like pennies, and you can get a brand new replacement case for an original Game Boy DMG for like, I don't know, $8. So all in, you're like, you know, $30 for a broken Game Boy or less, maybe 20, and then you mod it and you'll save a ton of money. So look into that. Handheldlegend.com is great, and they have a bunch of video tutorials by a guy who just does these tutorials for fun because Handheld Legend sends a bunch of free stuff. So check out those tutorials. They're really awesome, and hopefully that'll give you some encouragement on doing the mods yourself.
Now, when you're talking about a modded Game Boy, are there really any mods you can make to it other than a backlit screen? And are there different, you know, types of backlit screens that you could check and compare for Justin working on this project?
So the backlit part of it is really just a white square that goes behind the LCD display inside of the Game Boy. And really, your choices are what color you do. And there's also a Bivert mod.
All right, the one you mentioned before?
Yeah. What it does is it inverts the pixels. It makes the white pixels black and the black pixels white. And then you use a polarization filter, rotated 90 degrees, to basically do a negative image of those pixels. So the screen will look normal again once you rotate. Some people like to play with the colors inverted. I don't think that's a good look. There's another mod. You can get a Pro Sound mod for Game Boy. A lot of people like to use the Game Boy as a musical instrument. But pick up any Game Boy, brand new or not, you'll notice that the audio is kind of crackly. It's just kind of cheap. So there's a Pro Sound audio mod. It's like $30 of hardware. You solder that in and you're basically replacing the Game Boy's audio processor with this enhanced version that will get you super clean digital to analog audio that you can put through like a speaker and do a performance with. So yeah, if you're into chiptunes, that's what you'd want to do for your Game Boy. There's also, you could get replacement speakers, but you can go the full nine yards and do replacement controls. The D-pad and the buttons can be orange or green or purple or candy colored. You can change the case out. You can put different glass on the front of the screen.
Oh yeah.
They call that the lens. The original Game Boy came with a plastic lens and it just got scratched to heck and any kind of glare and you just see scratch, scratch, scratch. I buy replacement lenses that are made of glass, so they're very scratch resistant and they look great. and you don't have to worry about using your shirt to wipe some dust off the screen and get a bunch of tiny scratches. Getting into Game Boy modding is super inexpensive, and it's a great place to start if you're looking to get into old games. And Game Boy games are so cheap. You can go to a game show or an old game store, and you can probably, or a flea market, you can pick up good Game Boy games for less than $5. So yeah, Game Boy is a great place to start.
All right, cool. Thanks for all the advice, Scott. Mm-hmm. Our last email for the day comes from listener Andrew. He writes, I think you guys just got lucky with finding the NES Classic. I work usually from 3 to 11, so I head over to my 24-hour Walmart, and they were already sold out when I walked in at 12:05 a.m. All the retailers around me are now sold out, and since online retailers are only selling them in waves, around 5 every day, I have no way to purchase the console. I think Nintendo really messed up again with the supply chain of the console. So first of all, I think you do make a good point. I definitely think Nintendo didn't put enough out there, and it's unfortunate that it is so hard to find, and it's leaving a lot of people frustrated. However, I don't think ours had anything to do with the luck and everything to do with us being insane enough to get out there super early in the day.
Yeah. You were there at 12:05, but that was 5 minutes too late. If you were there at 11:50, I bet you would have gotten one of these things.
Yeah, I think, you know, showing up maybe a half hour in advance would probably do it. But yeah, 5 minutes after, probably too late. However, I was talking to a former Nintendo Power colleague recently, Phil Theobald from Player One podcast and Points of Articulation podcast. And he actually went out to a Target that opened at 7. And he went there at like 7:15 while we were still waiting in line over at our Target. He just walked on in and bought one without any worries. So I guess it is possible, even in the Bay Area. Hopefully it'll improve soon and people will just be able to get them. But yeah, it's just going to be crazy until after the holidays, that's for sure.
I think the lines would have been much worse if people knew how scarce these were actually going to be. Because they haven't really restocked.
You must be right.
They've barely restocked. I know Walmart's been doing a thing where they're holding a bunch back, and every day at like 5 p.m. they're
Yeah, that's what he was referring
it.
To.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's right.
That might be over now, though.
Mm.
But they had been doing that. But yeah. Hopefully they'll be able to get enough out there sooner or later.
I would hope there's a big restock sometime between now and like the 20th. That's all we can hope for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a rumor that Toys R Us is supposed to be getting a restock on Sunday, but I have no idea how true that is. So everybody who's still looking for one, I wish you luck. That takes care of our reader letters for this week. And I guess we should probably take a little intermission now, and then when we come back, we will discuss our big topic, which is the Nintendo Fan Holiday Buyer's Guide. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the Nintendo Fan's Holiday Buyer's Guide. Now, if you're a Nintendo fan, you already know that you want an NES Classic or you want one of these new 3DS systems that have been so hard to find that came out last week, or that you want the newest games and things of that nature. All that stuff is obvious and you already know about it. So what we did is we came up with a bunch of other Nintendo-related things that might be just a little less obvious. Things like collectibles or books or things of that nature. So each of us came up with about 5 items that we think might make good gifts either for your friends and loved ones or maybe for yourself that we put together and are going to go through and discuss here.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I will kick it off here with an item that I talked about not too terribly long ago on the show, and that is a book called The Art of Fire Emblem Awakening. And I mentioned when we discussed it a couple weeks ago when it first came out that I thought it was a fairly impressive book and had a lot of content to it. But now that I've had more time to sit down with it, I am just blown away. It is way more extensive than even I originally thought. And to call this darn thing an art book really isn't doing it justice. Now, it has all the art. It has character art. It has concept art. It has production illustrations. It has art of all of the minor warrior characters who are, you know, just enemies and things like that. It's got all the weapons in there. And then it's got extensive storyboards for all the cutscenes. It has text for every single ending and every single ending variation and every support conversation for every single character pairing in the game that's possible. So this is just a treasure trove of amazing stuff. So if you have a fan of Fire Emblem Awakening and you want to get him something really cool, I totally recommend this book. It's extremely thorough. It just has so much content. I don't think I'm going to be able to finish this thing for months just because of all of these pages of content to read through. It's kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. The list price on this thing is about $40, but you can pick it up on Amazon for about $25. So that one comes highly recommended.
Good deal.
Scott, what do you have?
I've got a book on my list. It's something I think I mentioned once before on the show. It's a book called I Am Error. It's part of...
Oh, it's all about Zelda 2?
It's all about the NES and a lot about the hardware of it and how it ran. So it demystifies a lot of stuff that I thought was magic as a kid. And I think for someone who's a fan of the NES, it's a great book, especially if you're technically minded and you want to get into the guts of what made the NES tick, the Famicom tick, and why the games were the way they were, how they implemented a game like Super Mario Brothers and a game like The Legend of Zelda on a platform that really was built to only play a game like Donkey Kong. So it's very, very informative and a fun, super fun read, surprisingly fun, even though it looks like a textbook from the outside. Don't be scared by that. So it's called I Am Error. It's part of the Platform Studies series. And it's $35 on Amazon. It's a little pricey for a book, but I absolutely love this book. I've read it twice already, and I highly recommend it, especially if you're somebody who's into, you know, how did the sound processor work in the NES? How do they compose music for it? How are the graphics composed for it? How do they make such big sprites in Mega Man 2? You'll figure out that and more just by reading this book.
Cool. Sounds neat.
And I'll tell you the secret of this giant bad guys in Mega Man 2.
It's backgrounds.
They're background tiles.
I knew that one. Well, everything else I probably wouldn't know, so I'm sure there's still a lot to learn from that.
There is a lot. It's way more than what the layman would possibly pick up in one read, so read it twice.
The next one I've got is, well, I guess you could also say this is a book. It is the Street Fighter comic books from Udon Entertainment. Now, the guys at Udon have quietly been making Street Fighter comics for more than 10 years, and I don't hear people talking about them a lot, but they're really, really good. They look great, the art is great, the stories are actually very good, and they don't, you know, follow the games exactly, because if they did, it would be extremely boring. It would just be a series of 12 fights. But they incorporate all the little story elements and make just a really cohesive, solid, fun, well-written universe out of this one-on-one fighting game. So I don't think it's nearly the credit it deserves. It's very, very well done. And like I said, I've been doing it for a long time. Plus, Udon is a company that contributes to lots of other video game projects. They actually contribute art to many of the Capcom games, and they've contributed to other video game projects as well. So it's really good stuff. You know, they have a monthly series that's been going throughout 2016 called Street Fighter Unlimited. So that's one place you could start by going out and getting the issues of that. So they're available as single issues as well as collected volumes. So you can go on to Amazon or to your bookstore and pick up the first volume of Street Fighter Unlimited for about $30. But there's also been, you know, numerous other volumes throughout the years. You could start at the very beginning with their series just called Street Fighter or Street Fighter 2 or Street Fighter 2 Turbo or Super Street Fighter 2. There's tons of stuff. But the latest one, which actually incorporates lots of elements of Street Fighter 3, is Street Fighter Unlimited Volume 1. It's very readily available. And all that stuff is good. So if you like Capcom, if you like Street Fighter stuff, I very much recommend checking out Udon's comic books for sure.
Then these were written for an American audience, or were they Japanese manga that were translated?
Well, actually, Udon is from Canada.
Oh my god, that's awesome! Yep. That's great. I love it.
So yes, it is written by North Americans for North Americans, but I mean, it's as true to the Street Fighter legacy as anything. I mean, I've read a lot of Street Fighter manga, but I would say that these comics are way, way better. I think they look better. I think they're better written. Excellent stuff.
Cool.
What you got next?
I have the Kirby Nendoroid from the Good Smile Company.
Oh.
It's the, we talked about it on the show before.
Yeah, a couple of times even.
I fell in love with this toy when a coworker of mine unboxed it on video, and he took out all the pieces and started posing him and with all the accessories. It's a Kirby fan's dream come true.
It's an awesome figure.
It is such a cool figure. It's probably the coolest Nendoroid I've ever seen. I'm not a huge fan of the Nendoroid line because it kind of cutifies the character, but for Kirby, he's just a pink puff anyway. So
yeah, it's a perfect fit for Kirby.
It's perfect. It's perfect. So the pieces are magnetic, and it's wonderful.
Right.
You can put Kirby in absolutely any pose you can think of. He comes with, I think, three different face plates, one where he's blowing an air puff, one he's smiling, and one he's doing the vacuum move. And there's actually physical geometry with the mouth part. So you can actually stick your finger in Kirby's mouth, which is really neat. He comes with a star wand. I'm doing this off the top of my head, by the way, but it's just there's a star wand. There's the flaming crown with the fire burst. And there's also, there's one more accessory.
A sword.
That's right. The sword and the green cap.
Yep.
So it's got tons of accessories. It comes with a stand, posable Kirby. You couldn't ask for anything more. Literally, like 20 figures in one with that Kirby statue, and he's got a bunch of different hand
parts. It's like the most posable figure ever because of the magnets. You can like put the hands and feet anywhere you could possibly imagine.
You can put him in a diving.
You can do something really weird.
Yeah, you can do some really fun and weird stuff. You can make him look like he's diving. You can make him look like he's sailing through the air. You can make it look like he's sitting. It's just a lot of fun to play with. You're going to want to take it out of the box right away and start playing with it. This is not a toy to just sit in the box on the shelf.
Yep, absolutely.
Not for children. Tiny, tiny parts.
Yeah, it'd be really easy to lose those parts if they came on.
For sure.
But still, it's a great collector's item. I guess in that case, I should move on to my action figure pick, which comes from the Japanese Figma line. It is a action figure of Link from The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds. And this just came out pretty recently. Of course, it is Link in sort of his semi-realistic, semi-cartoony guise as he appeared in that game, and also from Link to the Past. So in some ways, it's like my favorite visual interpretation of Link. I think it looks really cool. Not too realistic, but not super big-headed and cartoony like the Wind Waker Link. So I just really dig this representation of him. And then, as it is with every toy in the Figma line, it's just super, super articulated. You can put it in pretty much any pose imaginable. You know, it's even got joints in between, in the middle of the feet, so he could be standing on his tiptoes if you want. And of course, it does come with lots of accessories. I should mention there are two versions of this figure. There is a regular version, as well as an EX version that comes with lots of extra stuff. And by extra stuff, I mean accessories like his bomb, a hookshot, which comes in both retracted and expanded versions, the tornado rod, a rupee, a little pot that you can pretend that he's going to throw or break or something, as well as one of those little creatures that you find as a collectible throughout the game, those little octopus guys. I forget their names, but that's in there. And both versions come with the Master Sword and the Hylian Shield, as well as multiple face plates, both a happy look and a determined look, and multiple sets of hands, 8 hands in total.
Oh my
so
gosh.
You can have clenched fists or open hand for holding items or an open hand that has the bomb resting in it.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of good stuff there. It is a great collectible for Zelda fans based on one of my certainly top 5 Zelda games ever made. So I really like it. I just got it and just started opening up and fooling around with it. But so far, I'm super duper impressed. I'll be sure to take some pictures and post those sometime in the near future. I was looking around Amazon. I think you can get the EX version for about $50, and you can get the regular version for about $35 or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's worth it to get the EX version. All the extra accessories make it feel like you're getting more, like, extra toys. You're getting a lot more value. You can every 2 months switch out all the accessories and you'll feel like you have a new figure.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you're just going to display it with just the sword and shield and you know that, then I guess there's no need to get that stuff. But I like having the options and like being able to pose him in various positions. And I'm looking forward to, you know, putting the tornado rod in his hand and you know, look like he's, you know, floating through the air. Oh, plus it comes with a little flat standee of Link when he, you know, merges into the wall and just becomes like a drawing.
That's right. That's right.
So you can display him with that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool. I like it a lot. Very happy with it so far.
Awesome.
What else do you got?
Okay. Next on my list is an interactive toy.
Oh?
It's not really a toy. It's more like a musical instrument.
Oh, do tell.
It's called the Pocket Operator. It's by a company called Teenage Engineering. It's like a little circuit board with a bunch of buttons on it and a couple dials, and it makes music. It's a music machine. The one I have is themed for arcade sounds, but these sounds are going to sound awfully familiar to fans of the 8-bit NES because it takes a lot of those sounds and puts it in this device. So I'll just play a few of these for you probably here, and I'll also show you how you can put the sounds together to make a song. But yeah, check it out. It's on Teenage Engineering's website. I think it's just teenageengineering.com. They have like 8 different ones. I have only the arcade one and I'm in love with it. I bought it because I listened to some loops on YouTube of what people have done with it and I just fell in love with it. So here's what it sounds like.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So these are all the different sounds and I can play with the note of it. So that sounds familiar, doesn't it? That's like Mario's fireball. And you can modulate all these sounds, which is nice. And the display on the front of it is really cool. It's got what looks like an old arcade machine, and each of the buttons shows a different graphic when you press it.
All right.
I'm going to just play a few different loops that come pre-installed. I've made my own, but the batteries died, and I wiped out all my saved presets. But here we go. Here's another one. Pretty cool.
All right, sounds like just
you can play.
Yeah,
for sure. I've played with this dumb thing for hours. It has a headphone jack, so you can make your beats on the bus without anybody being annoyed by your toy. And then when you get to school or work, you can play your fresh tunes for your friends, or you can see their eyes roll back in their heads. But I absolutely love this thing. Highly recommend it, especially if you're interested in 8-bit chiptune-y music.
Okay, cool.
I think it's like $50, $60.
All right.
Totally worth it.
Well, I guess that means I should segue over into my audio-related pick, which is the Mario or Zelda 30th Anniversary CD sets.
Mm.
The Zelda Anniversary, of course, was this year, and the Super Mario Anniversary was last year. And over in Japan, they released double CD sets for both of these franchises with music spanning, you know, the entire series of games. So everything from Super Mario Brothers to Mario World to Mario Galaxy to Super Mario Maker. And the same with Zelda, you know, starting with the original Legend of Zelda on the Famicom Disk System, going all the way up to Triforce Heroes. And it's just a great selection of tunes from both games. It's just original sound versions of all this stuff. And it's just like, you know, really good audio gaming history right there at your fingertips, or your eardrums, I should say. I've still got a fairly old car and I still have a CD changer in it. And since I got these, they pretty much stayed in there nonstop. I'm just listening to them constantly. I was able to import them for about $30 each. I think I've seen them going for around $40 if you look carefully on Amazon. Sometimes they're more, but you can probably get away with getting them for about $40, which is not unreasonable at all for something like this. Unfortunately, it's not available on iTunes or anything like that. just gotta go and get the physical version. But yeah, I think they're great. I think they are fantastic. Good stuff to listen to.
Excellent. I did not pick that up, but considering it now, I do like listening to old music.
Speaking of which,
I also have some old music on my list. It's a Battletoads soundtrack, but it's on vinyl.
Oh, nice.
It's from the I Am 8-Bit store, so it's at iam8bit.com. It's a green vinyl record. You'll need a record player to really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's got the cover art is awesome, and I think even if you were just going to buy this to display, it's worth it for $25. The vinyl is
actually... Yeah, I've been doing that for a few things.
Yeah, I have a record player, so I... definitely think it's worth owning to listen to just because it's hilarious. Mm-hmm. It's the Battletoads soundtrack, which is not necessarily everyone's cup of tea, but I love it. It's official. It's music composed by
Rare made great stuff back in the day.
Yeah, they definitely did. And the vinyl is actually like neon green streaked with yellow, so it looks like Battletoads colored. It's just... Mm-hmm. A wonderful package, and for $25 it's hard to pass up. And it's 180-gram vinyl. It's heavy vinyl. This is really nice thick vinyl, and it sounds great, and it looks great, and it's a limited edition of 3,000, so get them before they're gone. It's at iam8bit.com.
All right, sounds very cool. Neat way to celebrate one of the coolest games on the NES. Okay, moving on to I guess this is my last pick, Mega Man the board game.
Oh, yeah. Was this on Kickstarter a while back?
It was originally a Kickstarter thing, yeah. And everything else I've talked about are things I actually own and have actually bought, but I have not actually got my hands on this Mega Man board game. Mm-hmm. I did not back it, and I do not own it as of yet. But as a Mega Man fan, oh, man, it just looks so flippin' cool. And, you know, I don't really know much about the rules or how it's played, but I know that you're Mega Man and you're trying to fight against the evil robot masters and defeat the bad guys and then conquer Dr. Wily, and that's how you win. But what's really cool about it is that it includes figurines of all the major characters. There's Mega Man, there's Dr. Wily, and then all six Mega Man 1 robot masters, Cutman, Elecman, Fireman, Iceman, Bombman, and Gutsman. And you know, it's amazing with how many Mega Man collectibles there have been over the years. There is no toy line that has made, like, a complete set of bosses like this in any, you know, decent 3D form. I mean, I've seen some, like, keychains with pixel art and stuff, but this is the first time someone's taken all the bosses from a single game and said, okay, here you go, here they are as collectibles. Unless you count the crappy ones from the old Ruby Spears cartoon.
That is so cool, because I think originally when the Kickstarter was first announced, they were like, well, these will probably be cardboard cutouts, but if we reach a certain goal, they'll be actual figurines. And I guess they reached their goal. These figurines look awesome, and the paint jobs are really good. They really look the part.
Yeah, they're like a 1.5-2 inches tall, but that's still plenty of room to pack in detail. And in addition to the ones that the game comes with, there are also expansion sets. So there's an expansion featuring Time Man and Oil Man, who were from Mega Man Powered Up on PSP. Yes, I mentioned a PSP game on here. Oh, my gosh. Then there are also additional figurines of Roll, that's Mega Man's sister, and Rush, his flying robo-dog. So, yeah, lots of good stuff there. I wish I could, you know, say for certain that, you know, it plays as great as it looks. But for now, I'll just have to be based on the fact that it has very, very cool collectible appeal. It looks like it sells for about $60. But I think I saw some sellers on Amazon going for less than that, for like, you know, $45 maybe. You know, just keep your eye out, see if you can get a good deal on it. It seems pretty darn nice.
Yeah, it's nice to have another thing from the Mega Man universe that's not just a figurine. Has there ever really been a Mega Man board game before this? Probably not.
I don't know, but this certainly looks cool. And
it does.
Man, just seeing it makes me think, well, you think there can be a sequel? Can we get a Mega Man 2 turned into a board game?
Oh, man.
Because that would be even more awesome.
For sure.
I would love to see all eight of those bosses captured as Game Boy piece figurines. So cross my fingers for that. What is your last pick, Scott?
Okay, my last pick's not super exciting, but I love going to Target and looking at the t-shirts because they're super cheap and they get some really fun licensed shirts. And Nintendo is one of those brands that licenses their designs for Target t-shirts, and Target t-shirts are like $10. And there's one brand new one, and it's the Famicom art for Super Mario, the one where he's jumping through the air and holding a mushroom. It's the...
Oh, and Bowser's a gorilla?
Yeah, except
or
we...
Or an ox, actually?
Except it's just Mario.
Oh, okay.
So you don't have to see the gorilla Bowser in this on this shirt.
All right.
But it is that Mario that we never got. It's because our box art is just that crummy, pixelated Mario and not the cool Famicom artwork that Europe and Japan got. So we get a little bit of an olive branch from Nintendo with them giving us this t-shirt to say, oh, we know you missed out on some cool box art, but here's a shirt to remind you that you missed out on some really cool box art. I think what I'm trying to say is we really didn't get some good box. Like, if you look at the Rockman box art and you look at our Mega Man box art, that is just case in point. So this is...
I would totally buy a shirt of the U.S. Mega Man 1 box art. I'll have you know.
I would not, but I would totally buy a shirt of the Rockman box art, but my gosh, that...
I'd buy shirts of both, actually.
That U.S. Mega Man is so bad. So I think it's $12 on Target. Totally worth it.
Oh, not bad. Yeah, I will add that if you're into video game t-shirts, which do make great gifts, by the way, 80stees.com is another good place to go. That's where I've gotten several of my shirts. And earlier this year, I picked up a pro wrestling one that I think I've mentioned on the show before that says "A Winner Is You" on there with all six of the playable characters in the game that's gotten a lot of comments from people. So that's another good place to check out if you're into video game-based apparel.
Are those fan shirts or are they actually licensed?
Oh, they're all officially licensed.
Yep. Oh, that's awesome.
Yep, pretty cool.
The other stuff on my list were, you know, kind of, well, from like $25 to like, I don't know, $60. So I felt like a $12 item in there, kind of like a stocking stuffer or a, what do you call a Hanukkah stocking stuffer? A Hanukkah bush stuffer? I don't know what you call it.
Sorry, you're asking the wrong guy.
I'll have to ask my wife. Yeah, so just a great little thought gift, especially for somebody who loves classic gaming.
Well, I think that wraps up our Nintendo fans gift guide. Hopefully people got some good ideas about gifts they can give to the other Nintendo fans in their life. And I guess that kind of brings this show to an end. But before we go, I do believe we still have time for a dramatic reading. Once again, we are dipping into the titles from the NES Classic, and in particular, this is going to be an excerpt from the manual from Dr. Mario. My name is Dr. Mario. Hi, everybody. I'm Mario. How's it going? Over the last few years, I've been involved in some pretty wild adventures. Now, believe it or not, I work in the virus research lab at the Mushroom Kingdom Hospital. Today, I'm about to begin my research as usual. Dr. Mario, something terrible has happened. What's wrong, Nurse Toadstool? One of the experiments has gone out of control. The viruses are spreading quickly. Oh no, we've got to do something. I have just developed a new vitamin that should be able to take care of it. I sure hope this stuff works.
They really didn't need a story for Dr. Mario.
You know, after all these years, I didn't even know Dr. Mario had a story.
It's so funny. He works at the hospital in the Mushroom Kingdom. I'm guessing most of the cases they have are either like, you know, lava burns, piranha plant bites... what do you think? Hammer to the head?
Probably. Certainly not a fungal infection.
Yeah, exactly. Not a virus. No one's getting sick in the Mushroom Kingdom.
But yeah, I mean, you read that and you think it's like, you know, the zombie apocalypse outbreak or something is on the way.
Wow.
Well, I think that does it for this week's episode. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Scott at Plastic Bugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com if you have comments about anything on this show or for any reason. And if you like the podcast, it would be great if you'd leave us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella, and my sparring partner, Bob Charlie,
ooh, ooh.
We will see you next time.